The Honourable Charles is not here. There is some mistake. Now he is out of order. But I accept him as he is. What am I doing? Feel flattered. Even if I'm patronizing you at this moment. We are going through the Basic Education Laws Amendment Bill today. And everyone, including our visitors, but remember our visitors do not participate, should have the Basic Education Laws Amendment Bill in front of them. And then the other thing that you have to have in front of you is the summary of submissions. Dated the 1st of March 2011. It starts with BLA 7. We sent the department a summary of all the submissions received last week, week before last. And the submissions goes as far as summary of submissions. These were sent to the department. Then the department went through it because you wanted the response from the department when it comes to the submissions. So we have this full document that you have to have in front of you. Then the DA submitted also their comments on the Basic Law Amendment Bill. And everyone should have that in front of them too. Have you got it? And this was already given to the department, so it will be discussed when it comes to our response from the department. It will be discussed today, so you know whether we can include it or whether we can't include it. Everyone got it? Thank you. I don't think there are any other submissions. So I would like to say good afternoon to you, and I hope that we're going to have a very fruitful meeting. I'm sure to the department now, everyone on your left side, on my left side, the department's officials, to everyone now, our department's officials, fine. I'll ask the officials from Advocate Leopold to introduce themselves going down, that everyone now knows exactly who are the officials here today. Before we go into apologies, thank you.
Good morning, my name is good afternoon. My name is Chris Leekens. I'm from Department of Basic Education.
Good afternoon, my name is Murubishana Ramafoko. I'm from Department of Basic Education.
Good afternoon, my name is Charles Lebaba from Department of Basic Education.
Good afternoon, my name is Alan Small from the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor.
I'm Rano van der Meeffer, the liaison officer of the minister.
The next is Maada in the district now. And say where you're from.
I'm Ruan Maada, the officer for the committee.
Equal education.
Good afternoon, members. Dimitri Holtzman, Equal Education.
Afternoon, my name is Mongi Henda, Equal Education.
Good afternoon, Kelly Pacenti, the Southern African Catholic Conference.
From Limpopo, member of this committee.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Nolita Bokoza Linda. I'm happy to be here, and I'm hoping that I can make a contribution and a difference. Fortunately, I have worked with almost all of them except for one, so it feels like home. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Alfred Bocha. I'm a member of this committee, representing the IAP, coming from the Kingdom.
Good afternoon. I'm Norman Genogina, member of the committee. Thank you.
I think you people are out of order to tell us you're coming from the Kingdom. Or else you can tell us again, your province has a name and a surname. We are not saying anything. Thanks a lot for the introduction. And Honorable Tekobo?
No, I don't know if we'll be, would be blind to a person. It doesn't help me much to hear that they are from the department. If they could say a little bit more, what do they do in the department? You refer to one as advocate, so I could guess what he could be doing. But the others, we don't know what they are doing.
Thanks, Honorable Tekova. We start with Rieke Sekai.
I'm a Director of Legal Services at Spartan Basic Education.
Thanks, Honorable Members and Chairperson. I'm Senior Legal Admin Officer responsible for legislative drafting.
Thank you, Chair. I'm a Legal Admin Officer, Legislative Services.
Thank you, Chairperson. Alan Small, Officer of the Chief State Law Advisor, Senior State Law Advisor. I certify the bill from the department. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for that. The other one is our Legal Advisor that's with us. And we won't be able to, unless you're an advocate, be able to call you our learned friends. We won't be able to do that. Thanks a lot for that introduction, because I think it's very necessary that we know who we're speaking to. I would like to have any apologies, Flo Ellen.
Thank you, Chairperson. Apologies received from Mr. Makubele, Ms. Mashishi, and Mr. Skosana. Smiles. Yeah, those are the apologies.
I'd like to move the apologies because I know certain people are sick. Move the apologies. Who would like to move the apologies from the honourable members? Thanks, Honourable Gina.
Okay.
Oh, you want to speak to it? Thanks.
Chair, yes, I move for them, but I think Chair to be proper next time if they can direct to us, like, as they're saying, you know that some others are sick, but you don't know that, but it's fine, let us move them for now, but in future, let us know why they are sick.
Thanks for that. Who seconds the apologies? Thank you, Honourable Member. And I think, too, we have to just check, when it comes to the apologies, should it not go through the chief whip of the different parties, you know, before it comes to us. Any apologies from the department?
Just Mrs. Vivian Carlson, she unfortunately cannot make it today. She's got some very other urgent commitments. She unfortunately cannot make it.
Any second for that apology, but it must be in writing next time. Is that apology moved? All right, thank you very much. Let us start, please, with the meeting. I'll hand over to Mr. Leakes, just to take us through the responses of the department when it comes to the different submissions made. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. If you can then go through the submissions, we've got a summary of submissions in front of us. The first a lot of submissions deals with receipts from South African agricultural and rice inning, and that deals with the definition of education institution and the proposal from the commentator is that the definition of education institution ends after the wording Act No. 84 of 1996. So the definition will then read, education institution means any school contemplated in the South African Schools Act of 1996, and then in brackets Act No. 84 of 1996. That is supported by the department. The reason being for that is that the further the part of the definition which deals with early childhood education, that is not really part of the department does not control childhood early childhood education as that is under the auspices of the Department of Social Development. We responsible from grade R onwards. So that is supported.
I don't know if I'm out of order, I'll shut me down. And so that we follow, otherwise it's scattered around. Yeah, how would be if we go to the bill, say there's clause one, if there are any changes in clause one, then he tells us clause two, go through the clause so that we follow the bill closely and in sequence. I'm not sure.
Thanks for that, Atai. Anyone else that would like to say something? Agreed. Fine. Is this in order, Mr. Yaka? Because I think it's going to make our work easier and it's going to go quicker. Thank you. And you add in the late submission too as we go along. Thank you. You may start.
But just to understand it, while it's been complete, I'll just go through the bowl, close by close, and
you
indicate if there's any changes.
Yes, Honorable Walmart. Wilma Chang.
Is this the point for me to speak to that particular section of the legislation?
I think yes, let us allow you, because just now we get lost as we go along.
Okay.
Because I'm sure there's things that other members would like to speak to, and you just stop us, thank you.
Okay. With reference to 9, I mean, we understand that there's a need to have an accounting officer at public schools, but we think it's a very bad idea to give principals financial responsibility, where their principal responsibility, in fact, is to manage the curriculum. And so, in fact, you will have principals sitting on financial committees and being distracted from their core function. And so you know that the financial responsibility of a school rests with the school governing body. We understand that there's a need to have an accounting officer, so somebody must explain why the money is spent in the way that it is. But we don't think the accounting officer should be the principal, or that the principal should be involved in the financial affairs of the school, or serve in committees of the SGB in order to carry out their function. We think this has been not in the interest of the learner. And therefore, our recommendation is to delete this clause in its entirety.
We can go further with the discussion. Honorable Sheena.
Chairperson. As we have discussed, I don't know, I'm referring to we, of which I cannot disclose this, do I own my saying we? A lot of members have said, but what we have seen is, looking at even at the submission that has been made by the Honorable Member James, when it says the job of the principal is to manage the curriculum. Yes, we fully agree with that one, but we cannot say that is the only job of the principal. As the manager of the school, curriculum is one of the things that he has to manage or she has to manage in school. There are HODs who are solely for the management of the curriculum. So we fully agree with what is here to say. The principal is the accounting officer of the school. Everybody's job is the principal in the school. So for us, the principal must be involved in the finances of the school, because at whatever level, he's the one that is going to account in whatever thing that is happening in the school. Yes, there must be the finance committee, but you cannot take away the principal from that committee. So he'll always remain the accounting officer of the school, no matter what. So we fully support what is there to have the principal being part of the finance committee and accounting on the finances of the school.
Thanks a lot, Uncle Sheena. Any other member that would like to add to this debate? Yes, Honorable Member.
Perhaps to first refer to the suggested amendment by our colleague from the DA. I can understand where you come from, but we come from a different tradition where the school principal was fully responsible for the running of the school, including financial matters. But my question is to the department, if the principal, as the clause says here, the principal should report what take all reasonable steps to prevent any financial maladministration or mismanagement by any staff member or by the governing body of the school. We've had instances where principals themselves mismanage finances of their schools. Who policies the principal in this case?
Jeff, how are we on?
Would anyone else want to add to this debate before we ask the department to answer?
Honourable Member, sorry.
Thank you. I'm too new to make anything, but I think on the face of it, I do not know what precedes the discussion, but on the face of what is here, is there still a way in the process of cleaning? bring up this, where both ends could meet, where the principal could be part as member of Burkina is, because I imagine that if you really, Honorable James, did not have anything to do with finance, let's not run away from it. Money is power, but not in the sense that the principal must have carte blanche on it, but somewhere, somehow, isn't there a way we could find each other where the principal is part of the committee, however he or she gets overseen by other structures? I foresee a principal that has got nothing to do with the finances whatsoever, whether whatever he says will hold. How are we going to measure his own appreciation of the finances of the very institution that the principal is presiding over? Because I think being involved in one part enables the principal to have a sense of accountability in terms of where the school is, the value, the wealth, the projections of the school, while in fact you need to strengthen that by the other people, which I agree with. So can we find a way, a middle way? I do not know if that process is still embracing some new thought. I do not know. You can take us beyond that. Thanks.
Thanks a lot, Honorable Member. I'll give over to the department. Thank you. Oh, yes, Honorable De Corvo.
No. Thanks, Chairperson. I understand the concern raised by the DA. I guess it has some background. Look, I was a principal until 11 months ago. You see, I think the concern here is that the principal should not be made a scapegoat. And I don't know if the department will concede the fact that I'm one of those who suspect that this thing is meant to deal with the court, several court cases that the department lost, where principal said, we have nothing to do with funds. It is school governing bodies. I don't know if they will concede that. But I come from my approach is that school governing bodies do not implement anything. They are not involved in management at all. The duty of the school governing bodies is to develop policies, and these policies are implemented by the principal. The school governing body, through a parents' meeting, will draw up a budget, and the principal is the one who is going to manage the budget. Every expenditure that takes place, is the principal will say, yes, there is need, number one. Number two, yes, it has been budgeted for. So for that reason, there is no way, in my view, that you can then remove the principal from accountability. Because he's the one who is there on a daily basis. Expenditure is done outside meetings of the school governing body. So in that sense then, my understanding has always been that the principal is the accounting officer.
I'm just giving Honorable James the last chance, and then we're going to ask the department to speak, and then we're going to wrap it up. Honorable James? Honorable James Wilmot. All right, sorry. You know, you are another one. Yes. Fine, thank you. Yes. You know, both surnames for a name. Thank you.
Are you done, Jen? The point, I mean, the legislation, proposed legislation says the principal must assist. And let me just state what my issue is and how we resolve it is probably a matter of detail. My concern is that in poorly run schools, where the school governing bodies don't function properly, principals would have to carry the burden of all the responsibilities in that school. If you had a well-functioning SGB, and there are schools with very good SGBs, the school governing body takes care of the finances, clearly with the help of the principal, and the principal has certain designated duties around that. But the burden of financial management resides in policy terms and in framework terms and in budgetary terms with the SGB. Now, my worry is that when you have poorly functioning SGBs, the principal would have to do everything, and in the process, you have the learner's education that's at risk, because not enough time, the principal doesn't have enough time to pay attention to matters of curriculum. That's the principal. function is the curriculum, and at the heart of the curriculum is the interest of the child. So ask the question, in the interest of a child's education, what is the best division of labor for the principal in relation to the SGP? So that's my concern objectively.
Thanks so much, Mr. Bieke. I mean, Mr. Bieke.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think maybe the intention behind the legislation is maybe not quite, I don't know if it's quite clear, but the intention is not for the principal to take over the finances of the school. That is clearly the function of the school governing body. If you read that provision carefully, we're saying that you must be a member of, and we must not change it, to the finance committee in order to manage any matter that has financial implications for the school. He's not taking over the finance office, but he needs to be part of the decision-making process, and he needs to account to the head of the department. At the end of the day, the principal is the professional manager of the school, and he's not there just for curriculum issues. Professional management does not just entail that he will take care of the curriculum. Responsible for the running of the school, and that may entail other matters besides the curriculum. But you can't just divorce the principal from the decision-making process in regards to finances, because at the end of the day, finances will impact on the school. And if you have a poorly run school where SGBs don't manage the finances properly, that may very negatively impact on education in the school, because you will not have the financial resources to run the school. But at the end of the day, the principal needs to also take responsibility, especially as he is the delegate of the head of department in the school governing body, and he is responsible for reporting to the head of department.
I would like, before we close this matter, the Honourable Mshwana and then the Honourable Bukhaz. Thank you. Now, I got a question here. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I do not understand why the principal should assist the governing body. My understanding is that the governing body should assist the principal, because the principal, as the manager of the school, is the person who is attached to the school. Seeing, I think somebody said it, but I want to reiterate that I believe it's the principal, actually, which would be taking care of the finances of the school. One of the responsibilities of principals when they are interviewed, I know I was also interviewed and I became one anyway, is to take care of the finances of the school. Such that the school governing body, it also depends. In some schools, the school governing bodies may not necessarily have the capacity. I think we talked about that. We know that there's a teacher component, and that's maybe our only basis to say that there may be capacity there. Fact that, yeah, let's not give the school government body all the power to come and control the funds of the school. Trust me, they will be, I don't have the right to put the thing.
Honourable Member.
Thanks, Chair. It's just an interjection, just to remind my colleague here, James, and the learned colleague over there, that the principal may not just be a he, there's a possibility and a desire that the principal is a she as well. So please mind your language. Thank you.
I like that one. But are you an advocate, madam? Are you an advocate?
I know.
Our learning. Yes. The Honourable Dudley is the last, then I'll make the decision.
Just to say, I would be inclined to be in favour of what is written here, and keeping the wording assisting the school governing body, because the school governing body has been given those functions. They have to be responsible, but clearly the principal cannot abdicate. The principal must be involved and is in a position then to be able to report anything. So to me, it has the right balance.
Thank you, Mr. Yerkes. Anything to say? Because everyone is in favour to keep the principal in. Let's continue, please. really, I'll give you the last point. I don't mind.
I understand what people are saying. I fear that the principles ought to be protected as well. And there's nothing in here that protects the principle. There should be some limitation put on the extent to which the principle is thrown into the financial affairs of the school. I mean, I agree, of course the principal is accountable on this question.
Yes, Honorable de Corbo.
No, I thought there is protection because, look, my understanding is that if the principal should become aware that something is not correct, he is under an obligation. Okay, that's fine. She is under an obligation to report that to the head of department. The only time, in my view, where the principal may be in trouble, number one, it must be established that she was aware. Number two, that she has failed to report. Because it doesn't say, there is no stick that the principal can exercise over the school government. But that's part and parcel of decision making. As somebody who understands the rules, and by the way, unfortunately, I don't have that job description of a principal because there is a collective agreement that has been signed. It tells you duties of a principal through deputy principal, teacher, and that financial management is one of them.
Thanks. Honorable
Thank you, Chair.
Okay.
We have experienced instances where a principal of a school becomes an all-powerful figure in the school, especially in rural areas where governing bodies aren't that au fait with the rules and laws running the education, in such a way that the principal will have his or her fingers in the kitty. And in the clause or anywhere, there's nowhere where this current body itself can report the principal. Then this thing goes on and on and on until the school is run down by the very same principal who has to report to the head of department. I don't know whether or not the department can think around such a safety clause when it comes to that. Just a comment.
Honorable Mr. Yakin, because I think that is very important, because who's watching the principal?
There are checks and balances in the legislation already in terms of the financial statements of the school that needs to be submitted to the head of department, and then the head of department can also refer it to the Auditor General for investigation. I think the challenge may be in practice on the compliance with this provision, because the intention is that all those financial statements that are submitted to the department, to the department's provincial department, must be scrutinized by those officials exactly to check on whether there is any maladministration or mismanagement by the principal. If that principal does not report it to the department.
We will complete now. I'm taking the last two hands. It's on Gina and then Shwana, and I'm closing that and making a ruling. Thank you.
Chair, thank you. I think when it comes to the protection of the principal and also of the school funds as such, I think maybe when the department has to look at this as to say, when we look at the auditors, the schools, whose choice is that of choosing the auditor? Because really, I think that is where lies the problem of the mismanagement of funds of the school, as to say, even that auditor will be chosen by the certain principal, let us say so. So you end up not really sure of what is happening with the management of funds within the school. If ever it is possible that we have auditors from the department or whatever, but let not all those powers be given to the principal, even to choose the auditor to audit the financial aid, because really, that is where the problem is when it comes to the finances of the school.
That's a word of advice. Mishwana?
Thank you, Chairperson. The principal, actually what's written here is like what's happening, is that the principal reports to the circuit manager. It's like that there are the questions as to who is taking, checking the principal, and he put it in that way. The principal reports to the check to the circuit manager, and the principal is working together with the school government board, but he leaves, actually. Maybe the agreement here might be that since the principal will also report to the circuit manager, we will agree that the principal manages the fund. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. I think everyone is speaking the same thing, but I think the department has to take notes of what the Honourable Gina said when it comes to our auditors. Because many a time schools just take anyone or they are in cahoots with those people. You can continue, Mr. Yerkes.
There are no changes to that one. And then in regard to clause 11, there was a comment by one of the commentators that this be changed to school, that school time be changed to school activities. However, our view is that the prohibition should not necessarily extend to the school activities, as the school activities is a very wide concept that includes all aspects of the school, social, cultural. Many of those activities can be after hours or at weekends. The intention here is to protect school time, but there was also a comment that school time is not clearly defined. So we thought that it's the function of the governing body to determine the times of the school. So we thought that we should just make reference to that specific provision in the African Schools Act. And what we've proposed is that after school time, that the following words be inserted as determined by the governing body in terms of section 20, sub 1, F of the South African Schools Act. So that sentence will read that no party political activities may be conducted at a school during school time as determined by the governing body in terms of section 21F of sub 1. Yeah, in terms of section 20, in brackets 1, brackets F, of South African Schools Act. That is the only change that we propose on that specific problem.
Honourable James would like to restart the debate and Honourable Dadri. Honourable James, Honourable Dadri. Honourable Dikova.
Thank you very much, Chair. What we are agreed on is that teaching time should be protected. And teaching time it varies obviously by school, but say it's between 8 and 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So that period of time, whatever that period in which teaching takes place, must be absolutely protected, and that is non-negotiable. So whichever way one phrases that, in the way that you suggest, I'm happy with that. What we would like to add is that we're talking about political interference, and it's easy to talk about political interference in a party political sense. So all the parties are agreed that they should not interfere in teaching time. But there's another kind of political interference, and that is trade union political interference. And so our recommendation is to say that when it comes to 33A1, it's no party political, and we suggest all trade union activities may be conducted at school during school time or teaching time. Thank you.
Honourable Dadley.
Thank you. I'd say there's no problem with the as determined by in relation to school time. Having brought up the issue of trade unions previously, I would say that this, submission of the DA would in fact take that into consideration and cover the concerns that I had, that I believed everybody had at the end of last year, particularly the department and the minister.
So we would agree with the submission here. No party political or trade union activities, etc.
Thank you for that. Onward to Corbo. And then we'll continue on the side.
Thank you, Chairperson. I had the addition there on the no party political, but I also see it under three there, where it mentions whether they don't think it's protection enough or it's going to appear twice. I'm not very sure. But the other thing that I'm aware that we used to use the concept of contact time. Would it make any difference instead of school time we say contact time? I'm not very sure. I know that at least at coalface level, people use the word concept contact time.
Think about that, Mr. Yerkes. Yes, Honourable Member.
Well, my colleague comes from union activism. That's why he's using contact time. I still use it come from the old school, school time. Well, I just give notice from our side that when it comes to the formal stage, that is voting for each clause, if we don't add the amendment from the DA, the IC won't support this clause. In other words, I support what is coming from the DA, because you really don't differentiate now between trade unionism and contractivity, also because some unions, teacher unions, in alliance with political parties, that cannot actually differentiate between those. And I can tell you the recent experience why I'm supporting this. A trade union wanted to congratulate schools and those that had done well during exams. They sent the circulars from the department, but want to find that the program, the speakers, everything was from the political party.
We're not going to ask which one, but a person can see when hearing elections, and I wonder whether people are going to live with this one. Unfortunately.
When you look at the bill, it says a member of a political party may not, for the purpose of conducting party political activities, encroach on school time. Yeah. Mm. And and there is a suggestion that we must add now that it means a member of party politics or trade union may not, for the purpose of political, party political activities, encroach the school time. Of which, I don't fully agree with the addition that has been made, Chairperson. When we talk of the trade unions, there are some activities, we all believe, I believe, and then I know that the purpose of the trade union is to look at the welfare of the educators and also the welfare of the learners. Make sure that the conditions are conducive so that learning and teaching can take place in a very conducive way. Now if we are going to say we are going to stop all the trade union activities within the school, I think we won't be doing justice to our system. I'll make an example. When we talk of school time then, we're talking of the whole 7 hours that these teachers and learners spend in school, specifically the teachers. And during that time, we've got some hours, flexible hours, where there are breaks, there are things where we can have these teachers coming together for their meetings on trade union issues. That will be sure that you are making better the way that they are going to present to the learners. So, for me, really, to say you are doing away with every meeting, with every activity within the schools that pertains to trade union, I think won't be doing justice to what you want to see happening in school. Because let us not look at the trade union activities in a very negative way only, because there are good things that are done by the trade unions. When they share information on how to teach better in schools, they go to the meetings, they come back and share whatever to make better their accommodation and make better the education system that we want it to be better. So really, for me, I think we'd be making a blunder if we totally say trade union activities should not take place during school time. Yes, I agree, they should not disturb the contact time of a teacher and a learner. We cannot expect a teacher to come up for class just to have a meeting in school of the union. But the hours are very flexible when it comes to that, where they can have those activities within the school, but not disturbing the contact time where the teacher and the learner need to contact. But when we talk of this school time, the school time is the whole 7 hours where they spend at school, and they can be flexible as not to disturb what is happening in class.
Honourable Bukuza, Linda.
Thank you, Chair. Again, I'm cautious and guarded in my, because I have respect for the process that has happened before me. So, however, having said that, there was a time where school was all for the culture of learning and teaching. And my assumption is that what we're trying to do is to create an environment that is conducive to that. And I think that by implication, we are trying to protect the school as a place of integrity where knowledge is produced and pursued. And this is what I think the bill sits to do. And so the bill must do that. So in saying that, I am saying SONA 2009, the president was emphasizing teachers in class and all of those things. 2010 and 11 or 2011, more the Triple T. I'm not talking about who that belongs to. But
I'm not in Parliament now. Yeah,
absolutely, yes. That's why I'm not saying it here. But having said that, I do want to underscore that a school is a place where knowledge is produced, manufactured, pursued, and processed, and therefore it's not a place of activism. So I am in that saying that, yes, no trade union must take place in that. I'm understanding that the teachers have needs, but I'm also saying that in trying to protect school as a place where learning must take place, then we must differentiate between activities of trade union and activities of school. So I am in support of the inclusion of the term trade union.
Thank you, Honourable Dakuba, and then Dakubo, and then Honourable Mishwana.
Thank you, Chairperson. Earlier on, I used the concept of contact time, and unlike Honourable Gina, for me, contact time is 7 hours, including break. School time may be up to 16 hours daily, where you have other extramural activities. And the understanding has always been to protect contact time, because as soon as you have extramural activities, it's a different matter. But I also want to caution that in wanting to achieve what we want to achieve, we shouldn't take away rights that are conferred elsewhere in law. Because, look, I think the problem that we have a problem of people who don't want to lead. We have a problem of people who don't want to manage. Already in my view, this is protected. By the way, honorable members, every teacher has 8 hours per annum. Every teacher is allowed 8 hours per annum to do exactly what we say teachers shouldn't do during contact hours. So there is that arrangement, and it is there, it is protected. Now, the problem that we have, I guess, is because there are those people who don't supervise, principals don't care whether the teacher has taken 100 hours or not, people don't want to manage, inspectors also, people are just basically afraid. Where we are now, if we do what we are doing here, we'll just be taking away those rights that are conferred elsewhere.
Honourable Mishwana.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm partly covered on the 7 hour issue as being the contact time. I think I agree with Honourable Dikos. But then when a learner goes to school, a learner must get knowledge, values, skills. And if we will believe that that must be run by the educators only, maybe we may not cover the education, we may not produce the envisaged product. Because when a child goes to school, a child must come out being a product that of the things that I just mentioned. Such that, yes, the contact time must not necessarily be deferred. If we change that school time to contact time, it will be understood that others may come to school, maybe after hours, to teach the learners, because they have to get the values, they have to get the skills. And these learners must get education broadly. We cannot confine them that most of us are seated here because they were educators, there were people who came. You'll understand, just to give you an example, that these days we don't have religious education per se, like as a subject. But we'll do it maybe through LO, and after hours, some people may come as agreed between the teachers and the school governing board. Like that, yeah, we need to allow these kids to learn everything that we learned ourselves, not just to confine them to AEO, it would not be correct. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable James, you're the last person, and I'll get over to Mr. Lietis and I'll make a decision.
Chair, what we need to decide is whether the rights of the child is more important than the labor rights of adults. That is what we need to decide. In our view, the rights of the child at a school is of the greatest importance, and those rights have to be protected. The fact is that many of our schools, especially in provinces where schooling is in a desperate state, is that the schools are not being managed by those who have the management responsibilities. You spoke about that earlier, the principals, but they are managed partly by trade unions. And so what we need to do is, in fact, take back managerial prerogative for the schools so that the schools are properly run by educators in the interest of the child. And the argument is for the teaching time, it's for the contact time. What happens after that? Schools, the ground can be used for a variety of purposes in the interest of education, fundraising, activities, and so on. But the teaching time has to be absolutely protected because the rights of the child is the most important thing. And that labor rights of adults come second.
Thanks a lot, Mr. Yerkes.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I hear the concerns of the DA on this one, but in terms of a current collective agreement between the Department of Education and unions, teachers are allowed school time off to attend union activities. I think Honourable DeCorbe touched on that, teachers are allowed 8 hours per year to attend union activities. If this provision is included in the bill, it may impact on that those rights in terms of that collective agreement. But that's the only comment I want to make.
You can ask
the
question.
Yes,
from
the department on this, still on this one, how they dealt with this incident of trade unionism and coaching on the school time. I think 2 years ago, teacher unions abandoned their classes, where they were campaigning for an aspirant president. There was a court case. They used school time just to do that, not what it was immediate to them. What was the reaction of didn't that present the department with a dilemma? Because there was no protection against that.
Thank you, Mr.
Yeager.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. The problem referred to by the Honorable Member is not one of law. It's a systems problem. So we would not really look into legislative measures in order to deal with systems problems. In such instances, definitely educators were out of order they committed the misconduct because they abdicated their responsibility towards the education system, towards the learners, and to the country. So they should have been charged in terms of Section 18 of the Employment of Educators Act. We hope in the future that such would not repeat, and the circuit managers who are responsible to oversee the activities in school and management of the principals will be able to play their role positively for that matter to ensure that such problems do not occur again. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for that. The ruling is, like we said earlier on, when it comes to clause by clause, then people will vote on it, and then we'll stick to what the department is saying. Thank you. Mr. Yakis? Oh, Advocate Gordon, sorry.
Sorry, if I could just comment and say that if through your chair, I could just like ask members to think about the proposal of trade union activities. In my mind, I'm asking myself, what do we understand trade union activity to mean? Because if we're looking at the labour function of trade unions, and we're looking at the ability of educators to embark on collective industrial action, strikes and lockouts are part of our labour legislation, and those that takes place during what we would talk about here as school time, but that would be in a different legal environment altogether. But if we were to include the words in this amendment bill to say that we are talking about a member of a political party or trade union may not, for the purposes of conducting trade union activities, encroach on school time, but the school time is to set by the governing body as our standard 7 hours or hours of the day, and yet when we embark on industrial action, that's going to impact, and then this piece of legislation is going to make that problematic. So I'm not saying I'm against the one forward, I would just like members to maybe think about that consequence that flows from that suggestion.
Thanks a lot, Advocate Gordon. I think it's food for thought, because there will be a time when we're going to vote clause by clause. Thanks a lot, Department. Continue.
Thank you. The next one is clause 12. Now, this clause, I think, presented the most problems to some of the commentators, and the intention here was that we be dealing here with school property, and there's need to be some sort of control mechanism to control the activity where school property is used. The concern was that this might impact on the abilities of governing bodies to raise additional funding in terms of Section 36 of the South African Schools Act, and this may hamper the activities or fundraising activities. But on the other hand, we're talking here about school property. There needs to be some measure of control, and we thought that the best way of controlling this is to bring the control in that they need to get the approval of the MEC. Now, the MEC does have control functions with some activities already, where a school needs to apply for a loan, it needs to get permission from the MEC to apply for such a loan. So what we've suggested, some middle ground between what is already in the bill and the concerns raised by the commentators. And we thought that the middle ground could be to get permission from the MEC if the school want to lease, convert or school property. So we formulated it in this way. A governing body may, with the approval of the MEC, lease, burden, convert, or alter school immovable property to provide for school activity or supplement the school fund of that school. And then we have suggested that that the B part will then fall away. Sorry, I've not jumped to 12B. I'll come back to 12A. But let me first deal with 12B. I think that's the most problematic. Then we've also suggested, with regard to the conducting of school business, that the same will apply here, that the governing body needs to get permission from the MEC, because business activities at schools may negatively impact on education in a particular school. Because we've heard some reports that of schools having panel meter shops on the school premises. Now, firstly, there's the issue of people gaining access to school grounds, and secondly, noise from business activities might impact on school on education. So there needs to be some sort of, there can't just be a free for all in this particular instance. So we thought that it should also be formulated, we could perhaps formulate it in the following way: a governing body may, with the approval of the MSC, allow a person to conduct a business activity on school property. Then, with regard to D, there was one of the commentators indicated that the word potential there, potentially dangerous. School sport is potentially dangerous, and you don't want to ban school sport. So we thought that perhaps we could take out the words potentially dangerous there, because I think hazardous is also equally descriptive of what we want to ban from schools. So we suggested that the word potentially dangerous be taken out as D. Five is still the same. And then I come back to two. I think the main concern here was that, the main concern here was that by getting the permission of the MEC for finance will delay the process too much. And we tend to agree with that. We have consulted also with our provincial legal advisors, and they agree that if you add the MEC for finance to the process, it might just further delay the process too much. So we then agreed that we take out that wording given with the concurrence of the member of the Executive Council, responsible for finance in the relevant province.
Thanks a lot. Would anyone want to debate the section? Honorable Mushwana, then it's James, and then Gina. Thank you. To call the law. You, after Gina. Mushwana.
Thank you, Chairperson. Actually, I need to check with the department if we are interested in the law that will be understood by the educators of this. Because the way it is explained, I'm not even clear if you are saying one of the MECs here must be removed. Because we're having two MECs. I'm talking to first eight. Are you saying one of them must go?
Yes.
Yeah.
MEC for finance.
Yeah, that's what I wanted you to say in a clear language. Thank you.
Honorable James.
No, I'm covered. I'm just. There has to be an arm length agreement to be able to use school property for purposes that in the end benefit the school. So that's fine. Thank you.
Honourable Corbo.
No, just to support the removal of the MEC for finance. Mm. But my understanding is that maybe it must be somewhere else. So that the understanding of the MEC for education is that there must always be money. But I mean, I always thought it was cumbersome for a school when the MEC has given permission. You say, did you talk to the MEC for finance? Mm-hmm. We're putting an extra burden on school. So MEC for education is sufficient, provided that somewhere in the conduct of MECs, they must make sure there is money provided for it. We can't run away from it, except that we must put it elsewhere.
I was covered because I wanted to add on B, 12B, close B again, I'm not sure. That's to say, even if the governing body may allow some of these reasonable use of the facilities, but we must be the parties to say it should be of benefit to the school, not any other person to benefit another facility.
Honorable member?
Covered.
Fine.
On financing, because to me it was making the
MEC for Finance as super minister.
Mr. Yerkes.
Thank you, and then I'll proceed to clause 13. That stays the same. The 14, also there's no changes there. The same with 15. The same with 16. The same with 17. The same with 18. Then just 19. We suggested that 19 be, we've accepted the input of faith, but we just want to formulate it differently. Mm-hmm. And the wording that we've suggested, I can just go to that particular wording. We suggested a different wording, different formulation.
Trying to
create a possibility somewhere.
Thank you. Honourable Member.
Yeah, thank you. No, I think I was fully covered by Honourable Vuvuzela.
Mr. Yaka.
I think the concern here was that FACE does not have currently the capacity to do in-service training, and that the functions of FACE should rather be to manage the continuing professional development system. I support the comment made by Honorable Kobe that we can change the wording as suggested.
Are you satisfied with your answer? You know the must, the must and the may. Why?
The whole provision will change, and I think the they wanted the flexibility and not to make it a must. I think the concern was the capacity of FACE to run with this continuing professional and financial implications of that. So that's why it was the must was changed to May to bring in that flexibility.
Honourable Nkosi.
Thank you, Chair. Does that achieve what is needed and is said here, if then there's a may? Because what if then it's all about may not? Is it achieving? Is it worth having this clause then? Why have it if it may and not? I mean, I think that that's weak. If there's any objection, if there is any objective to achieve, then let's face the objective. Or if the objective is optional, then that's a different thing. But why have anything if you're just leaving it to chance? What's the point?
Honorable Fukuza, I become chair. Let me look at the department and speak straight to the department and not through the chair. I become a bit jealous. Mr. Yassas?
I'll ask my colleague to respond to that.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. The May provision is included here specifically to allow that flexibility, not to make the provision weak. If we use must, it becomes obligatory. So in the absence of resources, we can be taken to court, or states can be taken to court for having failed to fulfill that obligation. So we allow that flexibility so that when resources are there, that function is fulfilled, and if there are no resources, then we'll be able to deal with it differently. Thank you.
Honorable Dadley.
I was going to say just the word manage would deal with that situation, but I hear now it won't deal with it because it's in terms of when there's finances available. So that does make it awkward, but in that sense it also does make it wishy-washy and seemingly irrelevant because it is obviously part of FACE's job, isn't it? So why are we mentioning it again? Because they are going to, if they have the money. So we have kind of watered it right down. If it just has must manage, then there would be a point of highlighting their job because it's now a must. But must within what? Depending on the resources, but I don't know. As it stands now, I agree that it's irrelevant because we're actually saying what FACE would do if they had the resources anyway.
On Mochina.
Chairperson, I think the question of whether the resources are there or not, to me paints a picture that somehow, some way, the department we are not prioritizing the issue of this continuous professional development of educators, of which I think we can all agree here to say that is the core thing that we need to do. We need to make sure that our educators, our teachers, up to standard. Now, if ever we are going to come up with an argument just to say, if ever the resources are there, then states can manage that. It means that we are well and fine if we say, for this year we don't have resources, and what is it that we do as a department? I think, really, as we go deeper to the point, it shows that we're not taking seriously the issue of teacher development as we wish the department can do that.
I'm just giving, yes, a question, and then the
honourable
lawyer has a chance to speak.
I see on the original sentence we have got the word promote. We have changed now to manage. My question is, who initiates this in-service training? Is it the department then says we manage? Am I getting confused here?
You may not answer. Honorable Jacobo?
Yeah, I think we have confused two issues and lumped them together. Because my view is that in-service training is the work of the employer. That's my point of departure. And then you have CPTD, Continued Professional Teacher Development, which, by the way, although we are not there yet, almost like what you have with other professions, where for continued licensing, you must do certain things. So where we are now in terms of CPTD, although the stick is not there yet, there is a requirement that every educator must get 150 development points over a certain period. But I'm saying, maybe unlike psychologists, for now there is nothing like, if you have not done it, you will not be re-licensed. But one suspicion is that we might as well go there with time, if we are serious about quality and all those things. Now, here, the issue of CPTD, and I think Richard has said it nicely, it's not the duty of SAIS to do continued professional teacher development. SAIS will accredit organizations that want to do that. And based on what they have, they will decide how many points are allocated to a particular program. Because, for example, if there is a company called Digo Enterprises wants to do, you will submit to SAIS and say, we want to do CPTD. They will study this and say, oh, this, if a teacher goes through this, he gets 20 points. Or he gets 30 points and all those things. But the more we talk, is the more I have a sense that we think SAIS is going to do training. Not at all. Not at all. Trainers will go to SAIS to get accredited, quality assure, and all those things. But again, you see, the initial proposal was that the employer must then pay for that. The employer must pay for that. But then unions were saying, and I think Mr. Hendricks said it the other day, that the concern is if the employer funds SAIS, SAIS will become beholden to the employer and therefore lose independence. Because at the moment, the way SAIS is funded now, 50% comes from the employees, 50% comes from the employer. Now, to do that, it means you must raise money that individuals pay, and this is not desired. So where do you get extra money? The suggestion was, no, let the department put the money. But teachers, unions are saying, oh, well, then the department is going to have a control over this. So we need to manage that. And I said to them, when we're discussing outside, maybe what we need to do is a legislation on extra funding of SAIS, rather than that coming from Department of Basic Education, because of fears of independence and all those things.
Thanks a lot. Before I take you, Gordon.
Thank you, Chair. My comment is just on the concern members have around the word may and must.
and whether or not FAFE is actually going to live up to an obligation or not in terms of this legislation. And listening also to the comment about budgetary constraints, resources, to what extent the states comply with it. My mind takes me to the Constitution, not in the same context, but just the principle and an analogy that I think we can draw from in this committee. In terms of, for instance, the socioeconomic rights in the Constitution, at the turn of democracy, when we had the Constitution, the provisions in the Constitution said the state must provide health care, housing, and all those socioeconomic rights. And there were quite a few constitutional court cases that came out for that because the state wasn't able to meet that obligation. But if we look at the internal limitations built into that section that says the state must, but then there's a qualifier within its available resources. And I'm thinking maybe that's a solution to what we're facing with here, not to the same extent as the socioeconomic rights. But if we are as a committee going to say to states, look, you must do this, you must offer this development or this training, then we make it perhaps an internal qualification to say within your resources. Because resources are quite easily determinable, and then there's, you know, the ability to ascertain whether states are then living up to that obligation in respect of the budgets that they have. And I think that's maybe one suggestion taking the committee forward.
Thanks a lot for that one. I'm just going to listen to the Honourable Bukuzane, and then I'll ask Mr. Yekas to speak, because I think it's very important what the Honourable Tukuba said, you know, when it comes to in-service training. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think I'm kind of warmed up by what the advocate is saying, because then she's building in some kind of caution. My issue was not the substance of what the department was trying to say, Chair, was in the intention of the clause itself. So I was saying from March to May, not even agitating for March or for May, but there's almost like a perception of a lapse of interest from what you thought must happen to what you think may happen. So it was more, it's not to change the substantive, but to just say, what are you trying to say? What are you trying to achieve? So say that which you expect of this clause to achieve.
Thanks a lot. Mr. Yekas, just speak to, again, to the wording of that section. Because people are querying that in service. Because I think here, when it comes to the response, it's may manage. That's the correct,
yeah,
you know, wording for that,
yes,
section. Thank you.
I think the suggestion that Maitre Askar Gordon is a very good one, that you add that wording of that safeguard there, that within available resources, must then do these things as spelled out in the law. So that particular wording then, I think, will be in that safeguard.
Thanks for that. So when it comes to 19.4, you're going to word it now differently, because SACE is not in service training. No, I just want to make it sure it is like that, because we know it's the department.
So the wording will be must manage within available resources. I think we can use the word must, but just both in that safeguard to say within available resources, the continuing professional development system.
Thanks a lot.
Sorry. What must it manage? In service training or professional?
Section 4.
Yeah.
Let us first
Honourable James, let us hold on with Section 4. Let us find out if anyone wants to debate or speak to Section 20, 21, 22, 23. Honourable Dudley.
My car broke down today and I'm having to lift some things, and so I'm going to have to run, but I will see you in the morning.
It's 9:30 in which room? E444. But I think, Honourable Dudley, you should have just written a note to the chairperson. Because we thought it was something to do with it.
No, I know you'll grab me as I
move by. Yes, I will grab you. Honourable James, let us go back to Section 4.
Now, I was just going to ask Honourable Dudley whether it's may or must, but never mind. Well, this is a definition of a loan.
Definition of loan.
Yes. And my impression is that this definition is a little old-fashioned. That there are, in the financial services industry, all kinds of things that schools may do and do pleasantly, such as set up unit trust facilities that are interest-bearing, and they borrow money against that. The definition of the loan, I thought, should be modernized. I don't have a suggestion here, but I'm working with a financial services person on a suggested reformulation to make sure that the notion of the loan, the legal definition of the loan, is in keeping with modern financial services definition.
Mr. Lierken?
I just wanted to add here that currently a school is only allowed to have one school fund. However, there is a further provision in the Act that surplus funds, the school can invest surplus funds with the permission of the MEC. Now, my submission is that control is already there. So where a school wish to invest money in a unit trust and then to borrow from that, the school will have to get the permission from the MEC. So that is the only comment I wish to make here. So my comment is there is already in the Act that control in there for the surplus investment funds of the school.
That sounds fine if it works. I bring the comment here because of an MEC's for Education's comment on this, saying that it might be burdensome on the MEC to have to approve every time when there is a lot of requests of this kind. And so it's much better to build it into the definition rather than to make it dependent on the MEC for Education's approval every time. So I'm just raising it as an issue. It's not a hard thing, but just to make sure that this definition is in keeping with modern practice.
Thanks a lot. And then, Mr. Yerkes, I think everyone spoke to parents too. Everyone satisfied with parent there? I think it's 4C, because it says also according to the Children's Act. Because I took out the Children's Act to see, you know, the way that you find parents, and it's the same as the Act. Of course, we wouldn't like to have different versions of who is a parent. Because the Act also speaks to guardian means a parent or other person who has guardianship. A parent in relation to the child includes the adoptive parents of the child. Everyone satisfied with parents?
Question?
Yes?
Still on Section 4. Mm-hmm. That prohibition does not include the payment of staff appointed by the government board in terms of such. Why is it forbidden? Is it to prevent schools from employing extra teachers? Because the current board may have a loan to pay any other person except a teacher or an educator appointed by the government board. Why is this
If you look at
at the definition currently in here, it means any financial obligation based on agreement. So that's the first requirement. And secondly, which obligation renders a school liable for making payments in one or more installments. Now, the argument is that the educators appointed by governing bodies is in terms of contract. So the first part of the definition would be then be present. So you have your employment contract, and then they will get paid monthly. That can be interpreted as being paid in installments. Now, just to take out that argument of that these agreements also fall under loan, we've added that the rider there, just to say that it does not include payment of staff appointed by governing body in terms of section 24 and 5, because we don't want governing bodies to comply to MECs to appoint staff.
Thank you, Honorable Hanaho.
Thank you, Chairperson. Can we go to 11.4? Yes. See, some of the old people will understand if you move from the known to the unknown. To me, some of the things here are unknown, and it's difficult for me to move forward unless we move from the known to the unknown. Now, I have a problem with the last part where you say material, that is a party political material that is related to the curriculum. I understand this, but can I just get one example so that it is very, very clear in my mind how one determines this? Just one example. If I can just get one example, I think to me then it would be from the known, then I can move into the unknown.
Honorable Tukubo.
Now, the example is where, for example, in one learning area, you teach about political parties.
Yeah.
So in that context, you also link that with a logo or banner or whatever.
Okay. Thank you. I think we are going to conclude now. There's no other business. Oh, yes. The members will have to remain, but we are going to conclude now. What is going to be the way forward? The department is going to work tonight. Because tomorrow you can come with the Basic Education Law Amendment Bill with these amendments. So there's work to be done. And you have to be ready for us at 9:30 in E-4. Then when it comes to the parties present, tomorrow we're going to vote on this bill. Yes? Yes? Within the meeting. So every party has to come with their positions tomorrow. Because you're going through it, you know, once you listen to the department and debate it, then we're going through it clause by clause. And then if that is completed and we have a vote on it, then this bill is completed to go to Parliament. Yes, Honourable Member.
Your chair, not, I'm not disagreeing with the chairperson. there's a disadvantage, Chair.
Yes.
For tomorrow, because today we're at an informal stage, the department bringing in some amendments, and we have to get a mandate from our caucuses.
Fine.
Now, what do we do?
Tomorrow, we go through it as completed. But don't take a position. Then on Thursday morning, Thursday afternoon, Thursday afternoon, remember everyone's prayer focuses on Thursday morning. All right, I'm not sure. But I'm let's listen to my wishes. And chairperson. We're going to listen to my wishes. I think, you know, like, there is instruction from the presiding officers that they would like us to complete this bill by Thursday.
And the only time we're having is Thursday afternoon. Because what's going to happen, if we carry it back over to next week, then it falls into, you know, our policy speeches. Because we have to oversight the department on their strategic plans. So let us discuss that. Let me hear how do the other parties feel.
Can I modify my statement? I think that we have got that
time frame.
Then we allow us to return. Let us have a formal stage tomorrow. Let us have a formal stage tomorrow because, in any way, I'm not having a caucus on Thursday. I don't know how other parties, but of course, reserving my position.
Let us just hold on. We'll come to a conclusion now. First, Advocate Gordon, and then Honourable Sokobo.
Thank you, Chair. I think, Chair, if I could ask you from the legal team side, if we could at least, if members are going to be seriously considering the bill tomorrow, that after that we at least get one night, because, Chair, we would have to compile an A-list.
Mm.
And our A-list has to be before the committee when the bill is voted on. We've had problems in the past where the A-list was not before the committee, and then there were all sorts of problems. So, Chair, if the committee does do final indications and they've given the legal team final insights on what the A-list amendment should be, then we request that you, Chair, for one, at least one evening so that the next morning the A-list can be done for the committee. Thank you.
Fine. I'm like,
I want to propose that... Let's look at it tomorrow, but maybe take it away as food for thought. I don't know if colleagues, honorable members would be hostile to the idea of meeting 14 hours on Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
We shall have had enough time to look at it, to apply our minds, to seek advice wherever advice could be sought.
I'll agree to that one. Are you coming with a counter-proposal? Counter-proposal? Not at all. All right.
Chair, our caucus does not meet on this coming Thursday. And I would need their concurrence.
I think Honourable Sokobo came up with something important. You have your amendments, not your amendments, but your comments, yeah? You said that if there's anything important, then, you know, perhaps you can speak to our political parties. Because we're leaving this over till Thursday, the 14th. Thursday, the 3rd, at 1400 hours. Yes? Yes, it is Thursday. Honourable member? Now first, yeah?
Chair, sure, thanks. Before we upset ourselves, I think that if we go back to our conversation this afternoon, there isn't much we disagreed on. There was just the trade union thing, if I think, where we differed sharply. So I'm saying, in fact, the most of the things we have managed to, you know, kind of converge on to one point in terms of that. So I do not know, well, it still is the issue that whether, and for me, I know the voting and it's how the system works. But again, if you look, Chair, through you, if you look at what we were saying from the side of trade unions and from the other side of saying be careful of the labor implications and all of that, couldn't we, even before the drafters go, find a middle way where that particular concern is contained? Because we are now talking about school time, we're talking about trade unions, and in a sense, we are not mutually exclusive with each other. So because if you look at it, we're going to just be stressed by kind of referring to, and in fact, we don't differ too much. But the thing is, are we able to sort of like accommodate the concerns around trade unions and what we think should happen so that we can, I mean, I just think that we pretty much agreed on a lot of the things.
I think let us do it this way. Tomorrow we're going again over, you know, through the bullet down. And then let us think on what we were discussing. And if people think differently, you know, of course, I think our only problem is when it comes to the activities is that of the trade union. And let us discuss it tomorrow. And I think after our discussion tomorrow, then we can, we can have the proposal that we have in our last meeting on Thursday afternoon. Because it's here that's A list and certain things have to be done, and we have to look at the desirability of this amendment. And then in that meeting, we'll vote to it. Because I think we know that when we take it to Parliament, there's going to be a debate on it. And then parties are going to give again their comments, and also, you know, the way they feel about certain sections. Okay? Department, you are, like I said, school dismissed. And we're going through the minutes.